Welcome to Tonight's Tale, a fairy tale theater podcast. We are reviewing every episode of Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater in alphabetical order. I am your host, Emily, from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm joined by my co-host, Eric.
Hi, I'm Eric from New York.
And this week we are joined by our guest host, Doug.
Hi, I'm Doug from Perth, Western Australia.
And we're very happy to have Doug joining us while we review and recap the episode Hansel and Gretel. Doug, I'm going to start with you. How did you first discover fairy tale theater?
Well, I've been a fan of fairy tale theater for as long as I can remember. I was born in 1983, and in Australia, we got fairy tale theater on video in 1984. So I probably would have been about 2 or 3 years old when my family was renting them, and I was watching with my sister, who was a few years older than me. Hansel and Gretel is actually the first episode I have a vivid memory of seeing, and also just being in love with the cover art from a very young age. So yeah, I've really grown up with fairy tale theater. I've never stopped loving it.
Ah, same.
So Hansel and Gretel premiered on December 5th, 1983. It was actually season 2, episode 6. Yeah, it's one of the earlier episodes. It was in the second season. So this is towards the very beginning of fairy tale theater.
Excellent. So what are the first things that spring to mind when you think of the episode Hansel and Gretel? Eric?
For me, I think automatically of Dame Joan Collins.
Same.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, this was in the heyday of her being the star of Dynasty, of being, her being Alexis.
I always say you can just imagine how much of a big deal this would have been for people back in 1983, because they'd grown to love, hate Alexis on Dynasty, seeing her as this like glamorous, rich bitch. And here she is in like peasant garb and in full witch makeup. I reckon this must have been a huge deal today.
I think you're right. And also, she just seemed to be having a ball with it. I get the feeling she loved putting on all that witch's makeup and playing a character so different. She's so beautiful. So different. This is a real character. And she's so beautiful.
She's really good as the witch. She's really good.
Yeah. She was nominated for a couple awards for this performance, I believe.
Yeah. I got a lot of attention.
So, yeah, I'm the same. When I wrote in my notes, what's the first thing that springs to mind? Joan Collins. That's all I wrote.
And if we talk about the other cast, we've got Ricky Schroeder as Hansel. Yeah. He was 12 when they filmed this. And you've got little Bridget Anderson as Gretel. She was 7.
Oh, she was tiny.
Gorgeous little thing. And he was big, I believe, for like Silver Spoons. And he was in a film called The Champ in the late 70s. So he had a bit of a name as a child actor. And people always say that he was the Macaulay Culkin of the early 80s.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that. And I knew he was the bigger star. You said he got top billing over Joan Collins.
That's right. So yeah, when the credits roll, it starts with Ricky Schroeder, then Joan Collins. I'm sure she really likes that.
Yeah. I'm sure to this day, Ricky Schroeder is proud of that.
Oh yeah, that one time he topped Joan Collins. And we also have Paul Dooley to round out the cast as the woodcutter.
And he had already appeared in the episode Rumpelstiltskin. He played the Miller in that episode. And he's another one of the Popeye alumni that we see throughout the series.
Oh, yeah. Now we'll talk about his magnificent beard when we see him as well.
And little Bridget Anderson, I was familiar with her. I don't know if anyone else was. I remember her from Savannah Smiles, and I grew up watching The Parent Trap Part 2. She's a.
I did see those after I saw Hansel and Gretel. Yeah.
This was one I could not find for a long time. So by the time I did see it, I already knew who Bridget Anderson was.
Well, you remember I said that I remember seeing this when I was very young.
Yeah.
And my family moved shortly after that. And the new video library that we were a member of did not have Hansel and Gretel. And I think my family have memories of me just being really frustrated, wanting to find this video. As a kid, you have limited resources, especially in the late 80s, early 90s. And it was years before I was able to find a copy that I could watch again. And that was just as good as I remembered.
Yeah. Half of the joy of fairy tale theater was the hunt of finding the episodes. And this was one I could not find.
Shout out to my mom, Australia. Because my mom got me this one from the video store. And I liked it so much that my mom claimed it lost and paid for it.
Aww.
You know what? I love your mother. I've thought about doing that when I was growing up. But
I thought about doing it too, and my dad wouldn't let me.
No, look at us with our honest parents.
She did that for a few. She did that for a few of my fairy tale theaters where they come in nondescript, clear or black cases with no artwork.
Okay. Your mother's a good lady.
So you're the reason I couldn't find it is what I'm hearing.
Well, unless you live in Mamaroneck, New York, then no, it's not. I did not affect you.
And also, while you've got me, I'll mention that in Australia, we never got The Little Mermaid on video.
Oh.
We never got The Princess Who Had Never Laughed.
That's so sad.
And Rip Van Winkle. Yeah, they never released them. And I didn't even know that they were ever episodes until, you know, the internet started to crank up a little bit and websites started to pop up with more information. And that's when, you know, Australians started to learn more about fairy tale theatre.
A website popped up, you say?
Sometime in the late 90s, I think.
Yeah, I wonder whose website that might have been.
Is it still up?
It's still up. Okay, so how familiar were you with the original fairy tale by the Brothers Grimm, Eric?
I'm not super familiar. I do remember reading it probably when I was younger. It was I remember the cover in my head. I can see it right now. Aww. And yeah, and I do remember reading it, but I don't remember the details of it to compare it to my rewatch.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I know I read the original tale. I was a German major. I know I've read it in the original German, but it's so far back. I do not remember it that well. Fortunately, though, I think we've got someone who is very familiar with the fairy tale.
Yeah, I'll admit this is my favorite fairy tale. I've read it many times, many versions, and I also collect vintage fairy tale books, and I try and get every copy of Hansel and Gretel that I like. And I'm in a good position to help guide you guys through the original tale. A little bit of background. It was collected by the Brothers Grimm and first published in 1812. While we're talking the original story, did you guys ever see the opera by Engelbert Humperdinck?
Yes. Yes. I saw that when I was a kid in Detroit, actually.
I mention it only because a lot of the music from the opera is sampled throughout this episode. So I'll make a point whenever that music is featured to just point out when it's playing and identify the part of the opera that it's from.
I love that. I remember Canon Movie Tales version of Hansel and Gretel followed the opera pretty closely. And I think they even had some of the songs, but I don't remember Fairy Tale Theater.
A lot of the music in the Canon Movie Tales is definitely
raise your hand and clap, clap, clap.
That's the one.
So you do know the opera, but yeah, that premiered in 1893. And it's traditionally a Christmas opera. And I think, Eric, you said this episode premiered in December of 1983. So I feel that they were trying to play off the popularity of the Christmas opera with a Christmas episode of Fairy Tale Theater. I only say that as well because this episode was actually filmed in July of 1982, but it didn't premiere until December 1983.
Well, that makes sense. They had to go out on location. This was something else that sticks out in my mind about Hansel and Gretel. It's one of the few ones where they went out on location. Eric and I were talking, there's not a lot where they left the studio. We know they went to a beach for Little Mermaid. They went out into the woods for Hansel and Gretel. Beauty and the Beast, they went out. But not a lot.
Yeah, I always liked those ones more. I always used to think about Hansel and Gretel being the best in the fairy tale theater series because it had such a theatrical look to the production. I felt like I was watching something that was really high quality. And then you'd see something else where it had the, you know, quaint, but more stage production sets. And it would be jarring compared to what you just saw with Hansel and Gretel.
Oh, I could see that.
Mm.
So starting our recap, the very first thing we have is our introduction by Shelley.
I love this introduction. They used it in many of the episodes. I remember this in Rumpelstiltskin. I remember this in The Frog Prince. I love her with the curly blonde hair and the blue dress and the flower crown and the very rehearsed opening lines of it where they were exactly the same for all those stories. And then just the very last line was different where she just talks about the one fairy tale that she's introducing. It's just brings back really good childhood memories for me. I just get like the warm and fuzzies when I see it.
Aww. I love that.
Hello, I'm Shelley Duvall. Welcome to Fairy Tale Theater. Today's tale is about a little boy and a girl who learn not to take candy from strangers. Joan Collins and Ricky Schroeder star in Hansel and Gretel.
Then after Shelley's intro, we roll the credits and we get some lovely background music over our credits.
No, this is the evening prayer from Act Two of the opera.
That's very cool.
So beautiful background music.
Yeah, and it works. It helps set the scene. We get our cast, starting with Ricky Schroeder and then Joan Collins, Bridget Anderson, and our crew.
Ah, now we've got director James Frawley. People will know him from directing the Muppet movie.
He did the Muppet movie? That's cool.
Also worth noting, this was written by Patricia Resnick, and she had just finished writing the movie 9 to 5.
Really?
The Dolly Parton? There was some talent behind this episode. Yeah, the Dolly Parton movie.
Wow. Very cool. Our scene opens with Joan Collins being the wicked stepmother to
Alexis.
The two little kids. Yes, she's definitely channeling Alexis from Dynasty here. Definitely. She was, this was definitely her Dynasty character. What did I say during the rewatch? I'm like, this is Alexis goes rustic.
So, and then she's beating the kids with a broom. Now, I always looked at this and I always feel like the broom is foreshadowing the witch.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of that, but you're right. I can totally see it.
And look, the children talk about their real mother and it quickly establishes the fact this is their stepmother.
Yeah, Hansel calls her mother and she goes,
I'm not your mother, and that is something to thank the Lord for.
Ouch.
So it's really reinforced that she is not their mother.
Love that line. So good.
And we have to talk about Paul Dooley here as the woodcutter father. And his, like I said, magnificent beard, which is fake as, but it really works.
It does work. It definitely works. And he's worried because he's not sure how he's going to feed his poor children and his wife, but he's more worried about the kids. They go to bed. The kids are sleeping in the loft and the parents are talking downstairs. And the stepmother is basically trying to talk her husband into child abandonment.
Yeah, she's got ideas. But she puts forward a really good argument, you know.
Don't mean that we should leave them in the forest to, God forbid, die.
Well, I know, but you said take them in the
forest. What I meant was that we should leave them there for somebody else to find. Someone better off than we are. After all, nearly everyone is better off than we are. Someone who can feed them and take care of them and clothe them properly. A man of property, perhaps, with a two-room house and a chicken or goose to spare.
Deep in the forest? What would a man of property be doing deep in the forest?
Prince! Royalty hunts in the forest. A barren prince with no issue of his own who will love and take care of the little darlings.
They're going to be left in the woods and they're going to be found by a prince, clearly. And then they won't have to feel guilty about abandoning them. I think it's a really good idea. Sold.
What could possibly go wrong? I noticed the music changed in the background. When she first starts with her plan, it's kind of sinister music, and then it switches to a romantic theme when she starts talking about how the prince will be hunting and he'll adopt them, and Gretel will be a princess. The music changes to kind of help sell the story.
But she does make one more statement to really hammer this home. If they abandon the children, tomorrow we can start to make noise again. What does that mean, Emily?
Oh, we know what that means.
Oh, we know what that means, and I'm not explaining it to you. Okay. She also mentions, okay, so her plan is to get rid of the kids because, you know, there are two more mouths to feed. But then she's like, oh, well, in time, we can have more kids. The logic there is interesting.
Yeah.
They decide it's for the best that they abandon children in the woods. That's their plan. Fortunately, Hansel and Gretel overhear it, and Gretel basically asks Hansel to save them, and Hansel does. I give Hansel some credit here. He's a very enterprising young man.
It's a good idea, and it has merit.
So what does he do?
He steals outside, and he collects shiny pebbles that are shining in the moonlight with the knowledge that he can drop those on the way into the forest the next day, and then at night, they can follow this trail back.
Yeah, it's a good plan. Will it work? Our next scene, we are on location again, and the stepmother packs up the family to go on a walk. And Hansel keeps kind of stopping to drop the pebbles. Now, I do remember this. I remember this from the fairy tale. This is one thing I remember very vividly from the fairy tale.
This is it. When he says,
I was just putting my little white cat over there. He's sitting on the roof. He wants to say goodbye to me.
That isn't the cat, you stupid boy. It's simply the morning sun glinting on the chimney. Now come along before I take a switch to you.
Yeah, Hansel doesn't have a cat.
We haven't seen a cat, let alone a white cat.
Let alone a white cat that sits on roofs.
And waves goodbye. Worth noting as well, as they're walking into the forest, we hear a little bit of music from the opera. This is a little bit of music from Act 1, Scene 1.
Very appropriate.
The whole time they're walking into the forest, Hansel keeps being berated for lagging. And I do love Joan Collins muttering to herself, "Wretched child."
Good for her. They build a campfire and the dad's kind of justifying it to himself. It's like, okay, at least I left him with a fire, so the beasts won't harm you.
There. Now you shall be nice and warm. And the wild beasts of the forest will not come near you as long as the fire burns.
Now, husband, off to your labors. You two children stay here by the fire. At noon, you may eat your lunch. And then if you're tired, you can lie down and rest. Your father and I are off to cut wood, and when we are finished, we shall come and fetch you.
And then they abandon them. They leave their kids in the woods and go home.
I love the part right before they leave, though, and then he goes to, like, hug them goodbye. It's like, he's, like, really upset. And she goes, "That's enough."
And may God watch over you.
Stop that at once! You'll see them by and by, and your tender words will only serve to frighten them.
Stop that at once.
Stop that at once. So but, funny.
Yeah, they think their father is nearby because they hear the axe.
Yep.
So they're comforted by the fact he's not going to leave them. But then when they wake up and it's dark, they decide to go and find their father. And what do they find instead?
Oh, well, they thought they heard the father's axe. And when they wake up, they discover what they were listening to was a branch on a tree, a branch blowing very unconvincingly.
Unconvincingly blowing in the wind.
Yeah.
And an unconvincing branch. It's just a bunch of 2x4s put together with some electrical tape. So
yeah. that was not a good special effect.
And clearly someone's up top just trying to hit it in a rhythm. Because it's not even a regular rhythm.
But then they turn away knowing that they've got to follow those pebbles back home. And there they are. The moon has lit the pebbles up. They can see where they're going. The plan worked.
It works. And we cut to the father and the stepmother in bed. Paul Dooley was very into this scene. I think he was very committed. He was very in character being in bed with Joan Collins. He was Joan dedicated Collins. To this scene.
Yeah, I know Joan Collins is acting, but I think she kind of felt she could have done better than Paul Dooley.
The stepmother's kind of, yeah, well, yeah, here we are.
Again.
Yeah, she wasn't as into it as her husband was. Just a funny scene. Mentions Hansel and Gretel, and she's already forgotten who they are.
Now, who could that be?
Oh, it's probably some lonely wanderer coming to beg for our last piece of bread.
You think it might be Hansel and Gretel?
Who?
Hansel and Gretel, my children.
Oh, that Hansel and Gretel. Oh, no, I'm sure they're eating venison with the prince by now with never a thought for us.
Hansel and who?
Hansel and who? So they're interrupted because there's a knock at the door. And she goes to answer it. And she's irritated at being interrupted in the middle of the night.
Also, she doesn't want him to answer the door. You're so soft-hearted, you give them our last piece of bread.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that.
Yeah, so she stands up. She arms herself with her broom again and opens the door and is ready to tell an adult where to go. Instead, she casts her eyes down and there's the two children.
Yeah, that was a clever choice either by Joan or the director. She opens the door and she's expecting someone of her height to be to be there, which makes sense. That's what we do. We answer a door. We expect someone to be of the same height. So she has to take a second and adjust and go.
But of course, it's their fault that they stayed out so long.
Well, she thinks about it for 1 second and turns on a dime.
So there you are, you bad, bad children. How naughty of you to stay so long in the woods. Your father and I were very worried about you. Now get to bed at once.
She's like, well, took you long enough.
But this is just an opportunity for her to come up with, you know, plan number two, which is leave the children in the woods again.
Well, yeah, basically. And she's working on the dad, trying to talk him into abandoning them a second time. Obviously, they didn't do a good enough job the first time. And
no, she does have to work a lot harder this time.
Yeah, she has to work a lot harder. The dad's He really doesn't like this plan, and this is probably the best scene in the entire episode, I think.
Yeah, no, this is an epic rant. Very dramatic, very, very Alexis.
We must take them even deeper into the forest so that the little bloodhounds cannot possibly sniff their way back home.
But surely it would be better to give our last crumbs to our children than to send them to die in the jaws of some beast.
Then you may as well go and cut the planks for our coffins. Oh, you fool! You stupid man! Is it better to have four coffins or two? And what's going to become of them if we die? Who will take care of them?
Woman, let me sleep.
Yes, sleep, you great oaf, while I go and take an axe and put an end to myself.
Quiet, wake the children.
What's the difference? They'll have to wake up anyway for my funeral.
Please, let me have some peace.
Yes, you'll have peace soon enough. When we're all under the cold, cold ground. Why have you caused me to be tied to a spineless excuse for a man who's bound and determined to see me in my grave? What have I done? That I must end my days in the prime of my life, withering away to skin and bone, the ache in my belly growing stronger and stronger until I'm dead, dead.
All right, all right. We'll do as you say.
You want me to rot away to skin and bones? It's like so dramatic, so soap opera, so soap opera diva. It's great. It's so over the top. I wrote in my notes, love this scene, so dramatic.
Yeah, and I'm going to admit that I know this scene word for word.
I believe it.
Happy to admit it. But yeah, I love this scene too.
It's wonderful. The word I wrote down in my notes was just diva.
Yep.
And you can see why Joan Collins was nominated for several awards for this performance. She is wonderful.
She is good, and she's enjoying herself.
Oh, yeah. So Hansel sneaks back down again because it worked last time, but he can't get out so easily. He finds the doors locked, and he tries to steal the key, but can't.
Can I just say, this particular scene reminds me of the scene in Return to Oz when Dorothy is trying to steal the key from the sleeping Mombi. It's got the same sort of like energy. It's quite scary for a child.
I could see that. I remember that scene. Good eye. I absolutely understand what you mean.
Yeah, my Return to Oz was a few years later, but as a child, I definitely drew the comparison.
I get that. So Hansel can't do what he did before. So he advises his little sister to go to sleep and hopefully something will come to them. So the next day they go off on another walk and Hansel is lagging again.
Now it's worth noting at this point, before they set off into the woods, you'll note the stepmother stops, pauses, and then walks in the opposite direction to where they went yesterday. That way they can't follow the trail of pebbles again.
I did not notice that. That makes perfect sense. I did not notice that. I always noticed she started in one direction and then changed, but that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And this is one of the things I noticed watching it again. There's a lot of logic inserted into the script, which isn't in the original tale, to just basically make things, I suppose, make sense for a more critical audience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Hansel doesn't have the pebbles, so he can only use what he's got, which is the bread. So he tears little breadcrumbs.
And what's waving at him from the roof this time?
Well, I was just looking at my little white pigeon. He's sitting there on the roof. He wants to say goodbye to me.
Boy, you have the mind of a cabbage. That is not your pigeon. It is simply the sun shining on the chimney. And even if it were, it's only a bird, and birds don't care about goodbyes. Or hellos, for that matter.
His little white pigeon.
His little white pigeon. That's another thing that's from the original story.
Yep. He still doesn't have a pet pigeon. I feel like going, Hansel, you don't have a pet cat and you don't have a pet pigeon. I'm with the stepmother. I'm with the stepmother. You're seeing things, you weirdo. Well, she's right.
She is very right.
Yeah.
So basically, they're at that point now where he's had to drop breadcrumbs the entire way, exhausting his supply of lunch. And then when they settle into the woods, Gretel becomes aware of this and very graciously shares her bread with Hansel. It's quite a sweet little sibling moment.
Aren't you going to eat now?
No, you see, I've come with my bread along the way and dropped it so that we can find our way home.
Oh.
then you must share mine. Thank you, sister.
I always like that. At this point, I'll say, I have a younger sister and we used to play Hansel and Gretel a lot, more my idea than hers. And yeah, we used to always act these sort of scenes out between the siblings.
I love that. I love where she shares the bread. I think it's such a cute scene.
I used to act it out with my sister, except I'm like, okay, so are you going to share your bread with me? She's like, no.
No. My sister was better than your sister. But they fall asleep. And then when they wake up, they decide that they're going to walk home. And then they realize the breadcrumbs, the birds.
Those stinking birds, I'm telling you.
Now, one of my favorite moments in the episode is here. They're frantically searching for the breadcrumbs and Hansel is dragging Gretel through the forest and he drags her through this branch with all of these twigs and they are whacking her in the face and she just carries on, the little professional. Have you ever noticed that?
No, I did not see that.
You've got to watch and you'll notice this. These branches are catching this little girl right in the face and she's flinching, but she's not stopping.
Good for her. That's commitment. I did write down Gretel seems to give up awful quickly. She's the first to go.
It's no use, Hansel. The birds have eaten them all. I'm terribly lost.
You'll see. By morning, we should be safe at home.
It's no use.
Well, she's just been beaten by a branch in the face. I think she just needs a timeout.
Team Gretel. Okay. That's fair. But we cut to the night and they're still wandering. I'm like, well, Gretel's a bit of a negative Nancy. She's utterly convinced that they're going to be eaten by wild beasts.
She's very morbid, always talking about death and being eaten.
Well, we know who's the pessimist.
But there's this other cute moment once it's daytime again. And they find some berries on the ground.
Oh, yeah, I love this. And Hansel is like, oh, don't eat it. They might be poisonous. And she pops it in her mouth anyway, and she starts eating. And he's like, and then so he goes ahead and does it too. He's like, okay, how do you feel? She's like, I feel fine. So they just keep eating the berries. It's a cute little moment of, you know, they're kids and they're hungry.
She's like, well, what have we got to lose at this point?
Look, there's, I mean, if you want to be really dark, it could mean that they're giving up. They're ready to die.
That's actually how I took it.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Gretel's been such a pessimist this whole time and it could kill you. She's like, well, let it.
No, also worth noting, there's another little bit of music from the opera here. The finale music from Act 3 is the upbeat music that's playing while they're searching for the berries. But we're getting to the good bit now. They see a little white bird.
Oh, they found a little white dove who leads them on. And the dove, which is a beautiful symbol of peace and trust, leads them to a house made of candy.
Delicious.
It's sweet. He actually picks her up and spins her around. That was so cute.
This is one of the best pieces of production design in the entire series, if you ask me. They nailed this little cottage. And I spoke with Shelley about this particular moment, knowing it's a favorite of mine. And she was very quick to say that she loved that set and she always wanted to keep the gingerbread house as a little cabin.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, me too.
There's a line that Hansel has as they go to start eating the house. And we've been arguing about what is that line. He goes,
and you have some of that candy window. Come on, Gretel's lovely.
And he bites his finger as he takes the roof off. And it seems very intentional that he's bitten his finger in order to obscure that word. And I just don't know what he's meant to say.
I wonder if it's Lebkuchen, which is gingerbread in German.
And I could imagine a 12-year-old American boy would be reluctant to say that, so he'd probably find a way to flub the line.
That might be.
I think that might be it. I've always thought that might have been it. But
that's the best I got. The other thing that it sounded like to me was longboat, and I don't think it's that. So I don't know what he was going for.
That doesn't make sense. But yeah, look, one day when we get hold of the script, who knows, we'll have the answer to that question.
That's true. And we get our first introduction of Joan Collins playing the witch. And it is fabulous. Can we take a second and talk about the dual role that she's playing? It's very reminiscent to me of Captain Hook, Mr. Darling and Peter Pan.
Yes, true.
I mean, it's wonderful to see her both in and out of makeup, but it was an interesting choice. I presume it was written having the idea of the same actress play both parts.
It's interesting because it's always been like an underlying thing that the stepmother disappears at the same time the witch disappears. So I suppose it's always been built into the original narrative that they were connected somehow. And this just makes it quite obvious.
Was the witch the stepmother?
Interesting.
Now, one thing to say, I love the first shot of the witch from inside the house, looking out the window when the children are unaware that she's there. It's so sinister and just dark. And as a child, I was never scared from this episode. I'll go on the record to say, but I imagine that this particular scene when the witch comes creeping out and those like there's that creepy music as she's approaching the children, I imagine
that's her line. Upset.
Nibble, nibble, little mouse, who is eating up my house?
That's from the original story, isn't it?
That is correct.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, the children see her and they are just so happy to go straight inside.
Well, they're hungry and pretty much out of options, so.
And it's also creepy the way she stops and looks around before she goes back in to make sure no one else is there with them, so she knows she's got them.
That's right.
Yeah, I love it. She's watching them through the window first and comes out, and they're clearly scared when she comes out at first. And she's like, you know, but come inside. You need to sleep. I'll make you food. And they're like, you know what? A bed and food sounds kind of good. Let's just go. You know, they just go with it. But I did write in my notes here, her makeup and her prosthetic is so good for the 80s.
Especially good. For a television production. It is quality.
The teeth, I mean, the eyebrows, I mean, everything. Yeah. The costume, the wig, the prosthetic nose, clearly the prosthetic chin. It's so well done. Loved it.
No, she was really brave to go through with all of that. That's a lot to cover up. And a lot of actors don't like working for that much makeup. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely took hours. Definitely took hours to put her into the witch's costume, for sure.
And look, she's hunched over. She's changed her voice. There's no way that you'd know this is Joan Collins unless someone told you.
Yeah, she transformed. She became the witch. It's fantastic. So I love in the next scene that she's making them food and she has a little table next to the bed. And she's like, you know, I made you food and you're going to eat. And she's so sweet and nice to them. And then she puts them to bed and they go to bed. And then we switch very quickly to the next scene where she's sitting in the rocking chair next to their bed.
Gretel has a sweet line before they switch. She asks Hansel, did we maybe die in the woods? And this is heaven?
Oh, yeah.
Still talking about death.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a morbid little girl.
Oh, and Hansel does say to her before they did you go to bed. I skipped over that part. He says, God is going to bless you for being so kind or something like that.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, thank you.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
There are some little religious moments. Gretel prays in a later scene, but Hansel does go, I don't think we're in heaven, but I think heaven would be someplace like this.
It's all very sweet. They're so safe.
Little does he know.
And that scene when they wake up and she's just sitting in that chair watching them, waiting until she's ready to drag Hansel into that cage.
Yeah.
Drag him, she does, by his ear.
By his ear, and like carries him straight in, but drop him into that cage. He's not alone.
Nope. No, he's not. And that part always spooked me.
To be fair, this is the first major deviation from the original story that this episode offers, is the inclusion of what we're going to refer to, because that's what he's referred to in the episode, is the little fat boy.
Poor kid.
He just reminded me of Bruno Jenkins from The Witches.
Yeah. Oh, I could see that. I could totally see that.
Yeah. The first victim.
The first victim, yes.
There's a look. But then they just awkwardly sit in that cage together. Like Hansel's like, so, how long have you been here?
Yeah, the fat boy doesn't say anything. He just keeps eating.
He's just buying into the whole thing. He's like, food, great. That's because he didn't have a little sister to help him out.
That's right.
And then this next scene after that, where...
Well, she wakes up Gretel. She tells Gretel exactly what she's going to do. Now, look,
creepy.
We have one of the best lines in the episode here. And I don't know if you guys watched the CBS Fox preview as often as I did, but this is the line that they use for Hansel and Gretel in that CBS Fox preview with Joan Collins as the witch.
Please don't eat my brother.
No, the one where she says... I am going to eat him because that is what witches like to do. They like to eat little boys and girls. And since that is what I like to do, that is what I am going to do. Now, as far as eating my house is concerned, I agree that it was rude, but that's why I built it in the first place, to entice greedy little boys and girls like you.
Oh, and I did wow. that. Bravo.
Oh, I try.
But it's one so of my good. Best it's so well written. I love it.
Yeah.
It
is, and you see, and little Joan Gretel is so trying committed. To suppress. Yeah. Little Gretel is trying to suppress a smile at the end of that little speech. It's quite cute.
Oh.
You can just tell that they were having a bit of fun with this. And she's, once again, the professional. She doesn't break fully, but you can tell there's a little smile on her face that she's trying to suppress.
Oh, I love that. But there's some, Bridget has some cute little lines here. I always loved.
Please don't eat my brother.
Oh, stop sniveling. There's work to be done, brother.
Please don't eat my brother.
So to the point.
Stop sniveling.
Yeah, stop sniveling. Oh, so this is when they go outside and she drags the little fat boy out of that cage and he tries his best to act and, you know, he's like, no, don't eat me, let me go. And yeah, we go, is he really going to be killed? And then the next thing we hear is this scream and screeching violins.
That's right.
She kills him. Oh, once again, I wasn't scared as a child. There was something wrong with me.
Well, first.
Well, she comes
first,
out.
Gretel and Hansel come up with the plan of hiding the food because they realized that the fat boy was just killed. So they're trying to.
This is serious.
Yeah. So that's how they come up with the plan of hiding the food under the straw, and then Gretel will take it out into the woods later, which is
but
a good plan.
Don't. Except she buries the dishes in the woods along with the food. The witch is going to know those dishes are missing. I'm sorry. The plan is a little bit flawed. But then the witch comes out and she's like, got a napkin and she's wiping her lips and she's like, yum, yum, he's the tastiest I've had this year. It's pretty obvious what's just happened. So she's eaten him. But as we know, she's about to turn his heart into gingerbread.
Yes. And Gretel says, I'd rather learn how to read.
Now, can we talk about this heart to batter scene? Because the pouring of the batter into the gingerbread mold, there's not enough.
It's always bothered me. It has always,
for the head.
Always bothered me.
Every time I watch it, I secretly hope, no, this time there's going to be enough batter to cover the arms, the legs, and the head. But it's the head never gets any batter.
It's like one little line of batter throughout the whole thing.
But you know,
like, what?
It's a small thing. It's inconsequential, but it always just gives me a little tick.
I love that. All three of us, we never just... discussed it. We never mentioned it, and all three of us have grown up noticing that and being bugged by it.
Yeah, right. But then we have that scene where they pop that mold into the oven, and she has her little song.
And she puts a cast iron grill into an oven and picks it back out with her hands.
Witch powers.
Can you imagine how hot that iron would have been?
Although it was only in there for about 5 seconds, but...
All right. Well, that one bothered me.
Do you, I mean, it's in the background as Gretel runs away to tell Hansel exactly what's happening, but do you notice the witch takes the gingerbread out of the mold and puts it up against the fence, and it's like half the size of all the other gingerbread children?
I did notice that.
Yeah, that's another little thing that bothered me. I'm like, well, yeah, because if the mold was going to be the same size as the fence, that would be a really big oven.
True.
Yeah.
But... you know, it's because she didn't use enough batter, as we told her.
That's it. Yep, that was that little fat boy had a very small heart.
And that's when Gretel realizes that all of the gingerbread children were actual children that the witch has eaten. Is that in the story? Because I do not remember it.
This is where the opera tends to like merge with the original story in some places, because... yep, there is a gingerbread fence in the opera that comes back to life at the end when the witch dies and it's all the children that she's eaten. But the majority of the original story, unless they want to incorporate that element from the opera, don't include the gingerbread fence.
I thought so. I thought in The Brothers Grimm, the children that were eaten, they were eaten.
Yeah, it was just cannibalism. That was it. There was no turning them into gingerbread. They were roasted and eaten.
That's what I thought. Yep.
So, I mean, you can see why they made a few little... touches to kind of soften the story a bit, because I think the idea of raw cannibalism would probably be a bit too much.
Yeah.
But here we get the scene now where the witch wants to feel Hansel's finger. So this scene has this amazing speech from Joan Collins as the witch. Once Hansel presents a bone instead of his finger and she realizes that he's so thin, she has the most epic rant, which I think even creeps Gretel out a little bit.
No, no, no! That will not do at all! I want fat, 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 rolls of fat, flesh and more flesh, soft, undulating, quivering, jiggling, mountains of young boy flesh. Oh, 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 I grew weak with happiness at the very thought of it. Oh, but I must be patient. Patience is a virtue that I have heard. We need food. Much, much more food. Gretel, come and make some more food.
It's such a good little monologue she has about that. It's so creepy, but yet, as I'm older, so campy and kind of amusing.
And then she's very quick to say that patience is a virtue of which she's heard. So that buys them some time.
Because she's a witch and she has no virtues.
Ah, yes, we get to that.
Hansel notices something kind of important about Gretel.
Oh, yes.
Because we saw Gretel sneak a couple bites of a cream puff, even though Hansel told her not to. And now Hansel's going, are you getting fatter?
Very dangerous, Hansel, very dangerous.
And she's like, but Hansel, the food, the smells, I realized in my life, the aching belly, what I've been missing. A little monologue she has about that. And it's really so sad.
And she she brings up a good point. She's been the one who's been doing all the work. She's been the manual laborer, and she needs to have some sugar and some energy.
Some sustenance.
Yeah.
And she's tempted by all this food she's never seen in her life. I mean, I think they've grown up with that sad brown bread their whole lives, pretty much.
Yeah, when Joan Collins wasn't stealing it from them.
True. And then right before we go to the montage with the food, I love the witch cutting that plastic fake pie that never gets cut.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in my mind, to like forgive that obvious error, I said she was just marking the pie to cut later.
Right. Okay.
No, the lies we tell ourselves.
Yeah, I don't know how many pies y'all have baked. I bake pies. That's not a thing, Doug. Okay.
So I'm the only one that likes to mark my pies before I cut them. Okay. I'm learning things about myself today.
Okay.
Then we have the part you're talking about, Doug, the montage.
Yeah, so then we enter what we call the cooking montage, where it's Gretel struggling to not eat the food that she's preparing for Hansel.
And it's good food. There's like, he gets like a whole roast chicken. And
I mean, isn't the witch at any point going, where are my plates? Is he eating the plates?
She can't be bothered with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right. She doesn't see very well anyway.
That's true. That's why she falls for the bone switch anyway.
Yeah. Once again, I keep referring to the logic in this script. Gretel says to Hansel, I mustn't let you out of there or she will know. So that removes the immediate excuse of, well, why don't you just let him out and run away?
Yeah. The witch also mentions that she can smell. She can smell both Hansel and Gretel, and she would notice right away if one of them went too far.
I don't think you can run away and get help. There's not a single soul for miles around. And the minute I miss your scent, I will eat your brother, fat or thin. So, yeah, lots of reasons to stay put.
You really do have this entire episode memorized.
You're welcome.
Very impressive.
So after our cooking montage, it is a month later.
Where? This is it. A bit more logic. Hansel has eaten every scrap of food that she has stored. Just in case you were wondering where the food has come from, she's been storing it.
Oh, I see.
An unnecessary bit of logic to include, but if anyone was seriously thinking, where is she getting all these chickens from?
Yeah, I hadn't caught that. So she'd been storing up to fatten up children.
That's it. She's got a whole store of chickens and cream puffs just ready to roll out whenever kids rock up.
But she's out of food now. So that's why she's going, all right, that's it. Tomorrow, fat or thin, I'm going to eat him.
Since she has no other virtues, she has no need for patience.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. And I must admit, I've used this line from time to time.
Cooking and killing, killing and
Cooking and killing, killing and cooking. Oh, it's a lovely life.
Such a good line.
That is a good line.
Yeah, it has so many uses.
Be careful now, who you say it to.
True. We have this scene, which I'm going to discuss with you now. The scene where Gretel is praying.
Yes.
Now, in my opinion, this is not Joan Collins. This is Joan Collins' stunt double.
Oh, who interrupts Gretel's prayer? Yeah. You think it was a stunt double?
It's got a different face. It's clearly dubbed. The lips don't match up. And it has a different way of walking. It's a lot slower and a lot more hunched over. So I have a feeling that this is a stunt double because Joan probably couldn't make it to set that day. And that stunt double wasn't aware of exactly how Joan had been carrying herself as the witch.
Interesting.
I'm sure I'm not alone.
Or maybe it was an added scene, Doug. Maybe it was a scene that they added in, the director added in. They couldn't get Joan to fly back in or something.
Now, it's just the thought that I've always had. But if you watch it again closely, the makeup has been applied, but to someone else.
Interesting.
Just the thought, but it's something I'm quite convinced of because you can tell it's Joan's voice. It's been dubbed by Joan, but the lips do not match up. So this person did not know how Joan was delivering the lines. This person did not know how Joan was walking. So, yeah. I think there are going to be a few people out there listening who are probably thinking, you know what? I've always thought something was a bit off about that particular scene with the witch.
Huh. How about that?
I have to go back and look. I feel like I vaguely remember this. I was a little tired when I was doing my rewatch last night, but I do vaguely remember this from like an earlier viewing. I do vaguely remember this where something seemed off about that, where she comes in and calls to Gretel, makes her get up.
And not to spoil the ending, but there's no way Joan Collins is the one that goes into that oven.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I reckon that was the same day and they got this other actress who was her stunt double to just knock that one scene on the head because Joan can't make it.
So that is what happens next is the witch tries to get Gretel to go into the oven to test how hot it is. Go Gretel, she's not having it.
No, she knows how to make this work for her.
Yeah, so Gretel's thinking on her feet and she's like, oh, I'm not sure I'm going to fit. Oh, even I can fit. I don't think so. And Gretel shoves her in and locks her in.
Oh, you have to comment, though, that cane that the witch thrusts out and how Gretel has to slam that door on the cane to break it.
It took her like four tries.
That's quite suspenseful because you think this witch could be out of there in a second.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I do like that touch. That was always a little bit of a favorite moment of mine. She's like slamming that door on that cane to break that off so she can lock it. And all the while the witch is screaming. Oh, epic.
And Gretel locks her in. She runs to free Hansel and the oven explodes.
And this is another clever little moment that was taken from the opera. Without the witch turning into gingerbread, we're left with the visual of a burning corpse. And I don't think that's what they wanted for this particular episode. So, they borrowed from the opera where they found it appropriate to remove the burning and the cannibalism. It's just magic. She turned into a cookie. She's not burning to death.
I mean, in logic, how? Because they didn't make her heart into batter. So how did she become gingerbread? I don't know. Witch magic, maybe that's her punishment. That's her punishment from the witch's gods. I don't know.
Yeah. Questions for another time, perhaps. But then, of course, all the gingerbread children turn back into real boys and girls.
Yes, they have their little ding-dong, the witch is dead moment.
No one was harmed in the making of this episode.
They all run away. You notice that? They all go, yay, and then they all split. No one even says thank you to Greta.
No, they didn't have time, and I don't think any of those children could actually act, so they didn't want to risk that.
Yes.
But here we have a couple of deviations from the original tale. At this point in the story, Hansel and Gretel search the witch's house and find her treasure, which they fill their pockets with, and they take home to their father.
That's right. I do remember that.
Yes, and there's also another little scene before they get home where they reach a river, which they can't cross, and a helpful duck carries them across one at a time. I don't know why, but that's in the story. So we dispense with the treasure and the duck, probably for the best.
I'm okay with dispensing of the duck.
Although I can just imagine how Fairy Tale Theater would have made that happen.
Oh, they would have. You know they would have. Oh, yeah.
So then, of course, the children run home because they know exactly where to go now.
How do they find their way home?
I think they just keep walking for a time until they start to recognize a part of the forest and then they see their house. Plus, we've got to wrap this up.
Yeah.
So they burst in and there's their father. sitting sad and alone because, in the meantime, the stepmother is dead. And they're a little bit shocked, but they're not too shocked.
And father's been searching for them every day because now he's got no wife and no kids. So he's been looking for them every day, but the stepmother is dead. The stepmother died when the witch died.
No, I was about to say, we need to wrap this up in a better way because otherwise we're just leaving with that.
Oh, well, and the witch died and the stepmother died and they're all united together. Hansel has some sort of little tagline there. I don't remember quite what he said, but it ends in a group hug.
Aw, see, I would have at least taken a bit of the witch gingerbread home with me to get me through that.
The witch gingerbread.
That was big. She was big. That would have fed them for a while.
Doug wants to eat the witch gingerbread.
She looked at the distance.
And on that note, we get our end credits with the main theme for Fairy Tale Theater playing.
Lovely. Oh, what a beautiful episode.
It was. I did notice they gave special thanks to the Rangers of Griffith Park. So, yes, that is where it was filmed.
Definitely.
Okay, so takeaways. What were your favorite things and least favorite things about this episode? Eric, I'll start with you.
Well, my favorite things I think I talked about already, but it's Joan. I mean, Dame Joan, she is everything. She is everything in this episode. She has some of the best lines. She has the best moments. Just really good. Just really good overall. I love the old school of it where she has a dual role. I love when fairy tale theater has a dual role actors in an episode. It's my favorite. And my least favorite things, I don't know. I find it to be a little slow at times. I love it. I do love it. It holds a special place in my heart. I do actually really love this episode. But there's some points where it's a little slow. Go pick it up a little faster. But overall, I really love this episode. It's like I said, it's one of my favorites. It's one of the oldest ones. It's one of my first ones, like Doug. But yeah, I like it.
I'm pretty much the same as you. Joan Collins is just, you could not have this episode without her. Her contribution was immeasurable. One thing that bothered me on the rewatch, and I say this with nothing but love and admiration, but little Bridget Anderson's performance. Now, she was 7, I get that. But some of her lines were really unconvincing. No, I just thought the script was a little too precious with how it treated Gretel. She's like, we're just going to be eaten up by wild beasts. I'm not exactly sure how I would fix it, but that was something that kind of bothered me. But I agree with you. The pacing could work a little faster. What about you, Doug?
Well, you know, I love this episode. I love everything about this episode. The production design, which is based on the work of Arthur Rackham, we should mention.
Oh,
they
yes.
They capture that. His illustrations are captured perfectly in this episode because they're very dark, they're very classic, they're all very serious. And I think I've always said this is probably one of the most serious episodes in fairy tale theater. Very few moments for jokes. Yeah, it takes itself very seriously, but in the best possible way. So I love everything about it. I think the costumes capture Arthur Rackham's designs as well. The music is amazing, the way it incorporates the opera. I mentioned the lighting, and I found the acting and the script, everything, it just worked for me. But then again, I'm a fan. I'll love this forever.
I love
and
that.
And the only thing I would change is I would put a little bit more batter in the witch's pot so that we would get the head of that gingerbread man, honestly.
Agreed. Definitely agreed. Yeah. That has bothered me since the 1980s.
And it will bother you forever.
It will. So I think I know your answer, Doug, but how would you rate this episode on a scale of 1 to 10?
This is a 10 out of 10 for me. And it always will be.
Saw that coming a mile away. What about you, Eric?
I would say like a 7.5 out of 10.
Okay. Yeah, probably the pacing mostly.
The pacing did it for me. The pacing. I know that this was one of the earlier episodes. I know that they were really trying to be very close to the text with even a lot of the lines. I did appreciate that. But I don't know. It was just a little bit slow. I think we could have amped it up. I think we could have definitely done without 2 trips to the woods to get rid of the kids. I think we could have just done with 1, which is what they did in the canon movie tales. If you remember, they only went once. They didn't try to get rid of them twice.
Yes, but then we wouldn't have Joan's speech to end all speeches.
Right, with the withering bones and the ache of my belly, yeah, all that. And then, of course, we're going to the door with the broom or something. But I don't know, like, there were things we could have trimmed here and there, and we could have definitely still been a good episode. But I do really like it.
Yeah, I'm mostly with you. I think I put it at a 7 out of 10. There's so much that I really like. I kind of wish there were some more joking moments. I mean, the only time I really started to laugh was with Joan's speech. But usually one of my favorite things about fairy tale theater is the comedy. And there's really not a lot of comedy here. So
that's funny. That's why I liked this episode, because I found the lack of comedy made it a little bit more enjoyable for me. But I was a weird kid.
We all were.
Mm.
Okay.
So this is my favorite part. This is where Doug, you're joining us for the very first time.
Yeah.
This is the part where I embarrass Emily and I read from her very old website from the 90s on the tripod site.
Ah, yes.
The snowwhite158.tripod.com.
You don't have to give out the full...
With the golden background. Oh, gosh. Yes. And this one, you gave it 2 spinning stars. So 2 out of 4 is what you gave it, because you use a 4-star scale.
Mm.
Yeah. So 2 out of 4 stars.
So what did I write 25 years ago?
This is what you had to say. You said a decent adaptation. This is certainly not my favorite episode, but I'll admit Hansel and Gretel is not my favorite fairy tale either. Joan Collins puts off another great performance in the dual roles of the stepmother and the witch, reminiscent of the traditional Captain Hook, Mr. Darling roles in Peter Pan, which is what you just said not too long ago. And she seems to enjoy both very much. Ricky Schroeder's Hansel is very well done. He is as sweet as little Bridget Anderson as Gretel. She is so adorable that one can't help but fall in love with her. While this fairy tale episode may not be the best adaptation out there, it is definitely full of great performances.
Huh. I only gave that 2 stars out of 4. That was harsh. Oh my. Yeah.
It's so adorable. I think it's great that you still carry the same sentiment about the dual roles in this and in Peter Pan.
Yeah. Wow. I did not remember that I said that on my website. Well, I don't remember anything I said on that website.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
Okay.
Oh, well, you'll have lots of fun, Doug, looking through all those. They're quite fun to look at. And even though half the links that she gave us back in the 90s don't work anymore, but like the Bridget Anderson fan page and Joan Collins and witch makeup, they don't work anymore.
Well, I won't be reading ahead. I'm going to wait till all of these reviews are read on the podcast. That's how I'm going to enjoy them again. But I'm very confident. I used to use that website all the way from Australia in 1998. It was one of the only resources that was online for fairy tale theater, and I made sure I used it. So thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. I put that together. Boy, yeah, I think I put it up in 1996, or at least started it. Yeah. So you're welcome. I'm glad to hear.
It's a good thing that you have different priorities in your life now.
Yes, I do. Okay, I think that's it for our recap. Going forward, is there anything from this episode that you want to learn more about, an actor or source material? I'll go first. I'll say I'm inspired to reread the fairy tale. It has been far too long, and I was embarrassed at how little I remembered.
I gotta say, I want to go back in the rewatch, and I want to go look at some of the things that Doug pointed out, because Doug had some really good insights that I was not paying attention to in my rewatch last night, maybe because I was so vigorously taking notes as well, and it was late at night. But yeah, I definitely want to go back and check out those scenes, especially with the stunt double. And yeah. I really want to check out some of those scenes.
Agreed.
I hope you enjoyed that. I mean, look, I have loved this episode since as long as I can remember. I have probably reviewed, studied, thought about this episode more than anyone. So the sort of takeaway or things that I want to do is I just want to learn more, because look, there's a rumor that Anne Bancroft was originally meant to play the stepmother witch role.
Oh.
Now, I've never heard anything concrete to confirm that, but it's come up a couple of times. And so I feel there's always more behind the scenes stuff that I want to find out, like alternate casting. There is an interview that I read with the director where he said that originally this was meant to be like a special effects ultimate episode, similar to Jack and the Beanstalk. But they turned away from that when they realized that, you know, real locations served the story better. So for me, it's, yeah, I always want to find out more behind the scenes information. Like, I'd love to hear what the cast remember and, you know, just really just learn more about the production.
And it's a small cast, and sadly, one of them's not with us anymore. Bridget Anderson passed away far, far too young.
Yeah, I think she was only 21. She passed away in 1997.
Yeah, that was very, very sad.
And it's probably worth mentioning that Dame Joan Collins has just turned 90 years old.
Yes, we are recording this on Dame Joan Collins's birthday. So happy birthday, Dame Joan. Well, thank you everyone for joining us for tonight's tale. Thank you, Doug, for being our guest host this week.
Thank you.
So join us next month when we review and recap the episode Jack and the Beanstalk. Until then, remember to live happily ever after. Good night.
Thank you and good night.
Thank you.